back, WNST, Tassel Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively going to have a crab cake. It's a Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all presented by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, in conjunction with our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have holiday cash drops. I do have a handful of Raven scratch-offs still to give away. We are at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog. We're not at Coney Island. We are no longer in Highland Town. We are in White Marsh. Andy joined us. He is back there working the crab cake action. And I figured, you know, I'm going to build the show around some fun friends. Tony De La Rose couldn't make it out today. We had Nick here, Andy here. Mike Hsu, who has never been on the show before, and I've never like done anything media oriented with you with Jay-Z. I was sort of banned at Jay-Z. I was sort of the other side from CBS Radio. But I've run into you in airports 1,000 times, yep. Going to Ravens games, yep. 1,000 times. I don't really know you well. We're Facebook friends. And I see you out doing this thing after,
yes,
Jay-Z.
Post Jay-Z.
When did you leave Jay-Z? I mean, because I'm going to say, was it like 2 or 3 years ago? You can be like 10.
No.
Because how long ago was it?
It was COVID. It was corporate and COVID driven, and CBS needed to get rid of 400 people, and I was one of them. And it was a case where my bosses were like, "It's not you. It's strictly their boss said it's time. We need these are the numbers. Here are the people go." And in fact, even like big time anchors out in LA, like, you know, like some, like, but people who'd be neighborhood or household names here in LA, like 5 of those people went because they weren't under contract. And you know how it works in the media business.
Sure.
You work on 3-year contracts. And mine was in that cycle, and I just negotiated a raise, but because there was a corporate merger, they have the ability to put the pause on everything. And then they did, and then COVID hit. And all of a sudden now they're just like, man, everything's
well, welcome to journalism, oh, right? Welcome to news, well, welcome to media, right?
But I was in the middle of signing my 9th contract. You know what I mean? I mean,
How many years were you there?
I did 27. I did 37 uninterrupted years of television news, which is both frightening and I'm proud of because it's a difficult business. You know what I mean?
Sure it is. What's your background? I don't even know. Where did you grow up and stuff?
Waukegan, Illinois. Up by Chicago, so I was a Bears. The great thing about being a Bears and a Cubs fan, there's always next year.
Right, of course.
You know, and you learn that early.
And when you get the number one pick, you know it's next year's the big year.
It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. So Chicago, the Illinois region. Then I went to Southern Illinois University because they had a great...
You were Saluki like Bass then. You and Bass were...
Yeah, we were a different age. He's a little bit more advanced than me.
Has more wisdom. Let's call it.
Oh, he has a lot more wisdom. So we were both Salukis. Boy, what a great memory you have. That's good, yeah.
Well, Marty and I are close. Nobody knows that.
Yeah.
Marty knows that.
Marty knows that.
But Sharon knows that, yeah. But not everybody knows that.
Yeah,
Marty. Dixie knows that, but not everybody knows
not
that.
Not everybody knows that.
But the news part of you being a media member, yeah. Me being a former media member, thanks, Chad Steele, that... The media people, we run into each other, and in a town like this,
yeah,
there's only a handful, literally. How many guys own an AM radio station,
exactly.
Here, right?
Like,
yeah. How many reporters? There's 4 stations, and there's a handful of people, and
right.
That's it.
Really. Well, you know what's great about Baltimore media is that we're all competitive if you're going head-to-head, but we're friendly, and that's one of the things that I... Like, people said, well, why don't you go to this market or that market or D.C., and I got nibbles from a lot of different places, but... DC is different. People, it's like personal competition, and I never understood that because we're all in it together. And maybe I'll get something today that you want, or you'll have something that I want. But that doesn't mean I like you less, or I don't want to talk to you off camera, or when we're not doing business. And Baltimore is such a great place for making those connections and being able to say, hey, how's it going? And chat. You know, when you're not in the midst of running. You know, and covering news. And I always appreciate it.
What was your favorite part of doing it? I mean, like, you were sort of man on the street. And, like,
yeah.
I think I had Matt standing out in snowstorms.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
You know, I had Rob Roblin on, who's, like, my all-time favorite reporter ever because he would do crazy things at the Preakness. You know, I had fun with him out. And he retired, and he came out and did the show with me last year. I actually had a margarita with him, which I loved.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get a Schlitz with me and you at some point. But the job... I know a lot about it, and it's a job that I, as a writer, I came from the newspaper side. I lucked into radio. Radio was not like what I was going to do.
Right.
Television was something like, oh, hey, you could be Johnny Bravo, and you know. And I tried out when Buren, when Ely got the job.
Yeah.
I was part. So was Don Moeller.
Yeah.
I was one of the people that got a read.
Right. Really.
With John Muir. Oh, I have the video. I had Buren on a couple
Moeller
weeks ago.
Got one too.
Moeller made the air. I watched Moeller in East Point Mall. On TV, do the 6 o'clock news one. He did a reading one night.
No
I didn't get to that cut.
Wow.
But
you'd have been good. I don't know why. You never knew what they were
I was 17 years old at the time. It was 1986. I was a kid.
Even better.
I was a kid.
Even better.
But people always said to me, you know, you could be TV. You know, I'm thinking to myself, all I remember is guys like you and Cunningham and Garson having that little wet thing in your ear in the back and the thing on the back. And anytime I would work with you guys, like Marty and Don would send me down back when you had a budget and Jay Newman didn't hate me.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, I would be at Oriole Park at Camden Yards all morning for the morning show. It's when they were too cheap to send Don and Marty and actually do a remote.
Yeah.
But they would be back in the studio. I was the unpaid guy from radio, wild, nasty Nestor, down at the Babe Ruth statue with the camera guy, 5:30 in the morning with the sun coming up.
And killing it.
But they would give me all of this stuff for TV that I was not a trained TV person. And I just thought, this is awkward. You know, doing television to me was always a little weirdly awkward and really fast. You had to say everything you needed to say because you got 30 seconds and we're back. And back to you, Denise. And I do radio and it's just sort of like open and we can talk and whatever. That was always the hardest part of your job was...
Get to the point.
Dude, you got 40 seconds.
Get to the point. And you know that clock's running in your head too. When
it's a different kind of work.
Yeah, yeah.
When I bring Billick on the show here, and I'll tell Brian this, he's not as good as he used to be because he worked in TV. And everything he gives me now, I had Mike Lupica and James Patterson on yesterday.
Wow.
Okay?
Nice.
They did a book
together.
And I looked at the transcript. Every one of their answers is like a sentence or two. Because they worked in television.
They were trained.
They worked in television.
They were trained
to
keep
it short. I'm trying to get a story out of them. I'm trying to, talk.
Yeah.
Story tell. You story tell now, right? Like your thing's different than what it was working at Channel 13.
Oh, completely. I mean, the time budgets are different. Everything's different. But I mean, it's sort of like the foundational part of storytelling. It's just expanded and it's longer in the sense that, you know, it's like telling a joke. I mean, telling a story is telling a joke. You give people some background, you give them some setup, and then you reveal the surprise, or someone else reveals the surprise. And as long as that sort of pattern fits, you're going to tell a story, whether it's a serious story about somebody dying or a new product or, you know.
Who, what, where, why, when, right?
That has to be part of it, but that's not the most important thing. And this is where I used to get in some philosophical discussions with my superiors about get to the point. And my point was the point will be much better if we get to the point in 30 or 40 seconds from now rather than we get to the point right now. Because if we get to the point right now, it's over. No one cares anymore. You know, you have to set it up. Oh,
crab cakes. Look out. This is the part of the crab cake tour we love. This is what we like the most. So keep going. We're telling stories. Dressings? Just a little ranch. Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's
absolutely.
Good for me too.
Thank you.
What's your name?
Lisa.
Hi, Lisa, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Mike's the man. So keep going. So storytelling.
I mean, storytelling is joke telling. And if
you said you would have differences of opinion with news people because they just wanted it, spit it out, not set up why it matters.
Correct.
Set up.
Give the perspective and give, for a joke to make sense, it has to be unexpected. And you have to know some of the facts ahead of time. I'm actually not a really good joke teller at all, but I can tell a story. If you don't have the what you need to know ahead of time, the punchline doesn't make sense. And if you're doing good storytelling, thank you. There are multiple reveals. There are multiple little aspects. Anything that is, like what I used to say about news is there are parts of any news story which naturally lead itself to be the surprise, which is the news angle of it. And you have to set up the surprises in order to get the most out of them, to have them be memorable. And the problem that a lot of people have when they do news stories, when you're talking about television news and not necessarily, you know, there's a person shot in West Baltimore, but something which has more of a story to it, is they don't do the diligence in setting up the surprises and letting the people who are affected be the ones who reveal the surprise, and then it has more meaning. I mean, there are plenty of stories that people do every day, but people don't necessarily remember them. And I think one of the things that I was fairly good at, and still am. I mean, I don't like saying that in that way because it sounds unusual to me to kind of brag that way, but it's being able to identify the surprises and produce the story in such a way that will allow those surprises to be revealed when the story is told, and therefore it will make it memorable. Because if you're doing work that's not memorable, well, who are you servicing and why are you doing that work? And eventually, will anybody ever hire you to do it? Because if your stuff's not memorable, well, then what's your value as a storyteller? So to me, it's all the little basics I learned along the way, doing news, but I learned it at a conference of photographers. National Press Photographers Association holds a conference every year. And luckily for me, early on in my career, a friend of mine went to that and came back and, you know, like you won't believe this. And he sort of laid down some of the basics for me. And I'm like, oh, that makes amazing amount of sense. And so I started to practice it poorly. And eventually got a little bit better. And now I'm one of the faculty members who teaches that at that workshop. And it's a source of pride for me because, you know, once you learn what you need to know, all the paths follow from that. And how to act and how to behave and how to just be out in the field. I mean, you know how...
Well, your job changed dramatically over 27 years.
Oh, tremendously, yeah, it did.
I mean, the technology, every part of it changed, right?
Yeah, everything. I mean, yes... One of the reasons I'm not very active on Twitter right now is because of having to do the forced religion when Twitter became hot. You know what I mean?
I got thrown off of Twitter after writing about Lamar Jackson about 5 weeks ago. I got banned and suspended. I have no idea. Who do you call?
No, there is no.
Right, exactly.
Who's the arbitrator?
This happened the weekend that all the journalists were getting thrown off.
Oh, wow.
It happened that
Congratulations.
Week. Yeah, I felt really good about that part, didn't I?
Like, really?
You know how much more work I'm getting done now that I've gotten thrown off Twitter?
I bet.
I'm way more productive the last 6 weeks. And I figure eventually they might let me back on. I mean, I still can read. It's hilarious because every time I pull it up, it says, you've been permanently suspended. And I'm thinking, my God.
And you didn't swear or curse, or you just...
Swearing and cursing can get you thrown off a tweet. I did not swear or curse. I didn't do anything. I wrote about Lamar Jackson. It was the week that Lamar cussed out the fan.
Right.
And I wrote about that.
Wow.
Yeah. Mike Shoes here, formerly of WJZ. Now, what do I say about you? Like, what you're doing your own thing. So you're going to start eating. You can't do that yet.
Oh, you can't yet?
Well,
oh.
Because we got to talk.
All right, and then, you're right.
Let me do this right. Test it.
Test it?
Yeah, let's do that. Right. It's the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're at G&A, and I'm about to get into this crab cake because I want to do it.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
He's Greek. I knew it was going to be good.
Anyway. All right. I'm going to put this out of my.
No, it's all right, man. I'm going to eat it. It's delicious.
All right.
So. 3 years ago.
That's what I'm doing. There you go.
MS Storyworks. Here, I'll hold that up right there. MS Storyworks. Yeah. There you go.
That's me.
What is MS? I know the MS. That's my shoe. Right. I got that
part. And then story. Obviously story. Mm-hmm. And then works. My stories work. MS Storyworks. You know, so I still do some news when they call. I mean, I've worked for the Washington Post and for a startup website and for CNN and then... one of my first jobs with Chesapeake Bay Media, so I'll still do some news.
Did you think you were going to go get a job at Channel 5? You were just done.
Blessings. So this happened like 2.5 months after COVID started. That's when the 400 people got let go on the same day. That was me too. So I did my 6 months on the couch because I was actually when I was out working at the height of the height of the beginning of COVID, where no one knew anything and all that stuff. I was a little jealous of the people who got to stay inside and be still get paid and be on the couch because I'm out there and we didn't know could we enter buildings, could we talk to people, how far away we're holding carbon fiber boom mics, across the alley to talk to somebody, and that while great that I was fortunate enough to be able to be out there and to be employed, there was a lot more stress that came with that because you didn't know, and I don't want to die,
right.
mean? I respected the virus at the time. Oh, I still do. God knows that's a silly statement. But having done that for 2.5 months, when everybody was let go, it was a bit of a relief in the sense, I get to kind of pull back from society a little bit. And at that point, I enjoyed that. But after 6 months, I was just bored out of my tree.
Right.
I mean, frankly, I mean, like a lot of people in media, I don't know how to do anything else.
This is all I've ever done.
No, I'm a one trick pony, man. I know how to tell stories and mow lawns. and I like mowing lawns. I didn't feel like reconfiguring myself to have to do something else. And God bless the great people who are in public relations and other ancillary businesses where a lot of former reporters go and work. I don't want to do that. And I've been blessed by having a good long career in the media, so I had the resources to be able to sit on the side for a while to figure out what I wanted to do.
I've ran into a couple of colleagues of ours, I would say, and I can even name drop. I mean, I ran into Brent Harris recently, not in the industry anymore, very happy. I ran into Rob Carlin recently, not in the business, very, very happy. And these are people who were go-to really, really knowledgeable sports journalist. Yeah. And I say that as a guy who spent most of my adulthood looking to hire really smart sports journalists who knew about the Ravens, knew enough that they could do this for a living, take phone calls, and not make a fool of themselves. Right. It was really hard to do.
It's hard.
So Luke is still with me all these years later, and we became this different kind of operation. But I've seen what's happened to TV News, what's happened to salaries of TV News, what's happened to the legacy people, Denise stepping down, you know, Bob Turk getting whatever happened to him that probably was a little untoward, that didn't really come out.
This is my poker face.
Yeah, I got you, man. But, like, I don't have a poker face about Jay Newman. I walked in, I told him exactly what I thought. So, you know, in retrospect, he didn't like that very much, but that's okay. It's okay, but I also know the embargo against me personally by some of these media organizations that I work for or against, and the fact that it's shrinking so dramatically, right?
Yeah.
And I could talk about Chad Steele and my press pass and all that, but the truth is the Ravens are going to play a game in Cincinnati on Sunday night. It's the biggest game of the year. And when the game ends in Cincinnati, they're probably going to lose. Maybe by the time you listen to this, they have lost it. Maybe they've won and we're playing Kansas City this week, and that, Lord knows that's possible. But I know this. When the game ends, John's going to come downstairs into that interview room that he was in the other day, and there's going to be two or three reporters in there.
Yeah.
And that's it. Well, and there used to be 20.
There used to be 20. And what's unfair about this is every single manager out there is saying, oh, no, there's a camera in there. We'll just take the feed. But what they're missing is you need someone sitting in the chair
to ask the questions.
To ask the right questions. And one of the things that drives me nuts about sports journalism is that as a whole, the sports journalists have to keep going back to the same well all the time. So it seems to me, as a regular news journalist, they don't want to piss those people off.
At all.
So
at all.
They ask these little fluffy wiffle ball on top of the stand questions. And instead of asking the simple...
There's an intimidation level by all of them, right? By athletes and by coaches, that me being in sports, that it's taken me taking the cuffs off to say, I can get Wes Moore on the phone right now. I can get Cal Ripken. They would come and sit, and you could have a crab cake. All these people would have a crab cake. The only ones I can't get a crab cake with are the people involved with the Orioles and the Ravens. And my whole business was set up, my whole media organization was set up to love them, pat them on the back, help them sell tickets, help them sell fireworks nights, all of that, right? And it's unbelievable the amount of arrogance that is endemic. It's just built in. This built in, we're more important than you, that I don't deal with anywhere else in the world. When I go to a business, I want to promote your crab cake, they say sure. When I go to you and say I want to promote StoryWorks, you're like, sure, I want to come out. Yeah. And as long as you're a nice guy and you do it from integrity, sports isn't like that. Sports is, from the beginning, you're rat poison. You're a 14-year-old kid who can poop. They tell you, avoid the media, the media.
Yeah.
The agent comes in, says avoid the media. The AAU handler says avoid the media. Then the college coach gets a handle of them and says, they're rat poison, and then they show up here.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have no shot of ever getting through whatever that exterior of you're only here to do me harm.
Well, that's
you're
it.
Only here
it,
to do
it,
me
is
harm.
That it's made to be that way. You're only there to do harm. So the three guys are people who are in the room to ask those questions. They're just going to give them fluff balls. So no one's going to say the simple question, which is, "Whew, you really stunk it up today," which is a valid question because then they can go. They can really go in a million different directions.
The last set of questions I asked that really pissed them off. Last season, right before Lamar got hurt, they played the Minnesota Vikings. Mm-hmm. They played an overtime game here.
Yep. Yeah.
Lamar ran the ball 21 times in the game.
Yeah.
At the end of the game, I went to, and they won barely, and they had to scrap. It was when they were falling apart, right?
Yeah.
And I went down in the locker room, and Lamar was first one out, and I said, Lamar, you ran the ball 21 times today. Do you think that's sustainable? And any answer is a good answer. I've asked him, hey, I ran more today than we should. It's probably, I'm not going to run 21 times every week. You just say something, move on, right? Instead, he burred up. And you know, and then Harbaugh came out, and I gave him the same question. Harbaugh, I got the neck all like Godzilla, you know. And I'm like,
you have a lot of power, my friend.
I said, bro, your quarterback ran the ball 20. You can say that that's too much. It's okay to say that, right?
It's okay.
And it's okay to say that your quarterback seeking contact is not safe long term. And there's a reason the other 31 teams do it differently and strategize it differently.
Yeah.
They strategize it so the quarterback doesn't run into the linebacker.
Right.
This is
right.
part of this isn't a you know, this is a feature, not a bug in yeah. your offense, right? So and then when you piss them off, you find you don't have a press credential 6 months later because you're the only one in there willing to take the obvious, which is you ran the ball 21 times and base a question on that. They don't, but the difference in sports, in a big way, is they are their own media organization.
Yeah. Yes.
And they weren't 20 years ago. Ray Lewis used to have to wait at his locker for me and John Buren to come by and ask what he thought and put it on.
Yeah.
Now, once social media happened, the paradigm shifted.
Yeah. The democratization of media and everything. Yeah. Absolutely. And they bought their way in, smartly so. So they can put what they want out there. You know?
Did you see the end coming for you business-wise? That like at some point you knew the thing was shrinking and at some point it would get to you? Because I wonder that for me. At some point it's shrinking. I know
Mine didn't shrink. Mine was a lot of side factors. It had that, and I believe the bosses, when they said it had nothing to do with me, I knew for a while. I was good at what I did, but I knew for a couple of years it wasn't necessary lighting my own fires because of the boxes that we had to work in to be a local television news reporter, at least for me in the morning. So the opportunities to do what I really enjoyed doing, I thought every story that made it out the door was acceptable and was okay. But the ones that I loved, I had maybe two or three times a year where I really liked a story. So that showed me that, wow, there's a lot of days where I'm trying to make the best out of something. But that was the only way to keep myself sane. It's a really long roundabout answer to your question, which is early on I learned that even if you grade a story on a 1 to 10 basis, there are some days it's just a 3. There's nothing you can do about it.
We're just putting something on the air. Yeah.
Well, it's just a 3. It has some value, but it's at the minimal level of 3. Then if you're going to go do a 3, what can you do to make that a 4? Is there anything you can do? Can your writing be perfect? Can your stand-up be good? Can you ask just the right question? Can you think about how to tell this in a way that has a theme or the photography is amazing? If you can put 3s to 4s and 4s to 5s, you know, it's kind of like a baseball player is a slap.
It's special sauce.
What I mean? It's like someone who, like, maybe not great, but they're going to get on first and second all the time. Well, if I know that I can put that guy and he can get it first every time, well, that's there's value to that. So,
sure.
So when you say, did I see the end coming, I saw that I wasn't doing the stories I loved as much, but what made me intellectually interested in it was, how can I take whatever I got? If I'm given an ugly baby, what can I do with that? How can I make that thing prettier and better? And then occasionally everything came together and there were those great days where, like, wow, that was unexpected.
Right.
This was a really good day. This was a really good story. You know, I have to go beg for more time and all that stuff. And so, I knew the industry was changing. But on the other hand, people have called me and want me to come back to do the work. So the work is still there. And there's still jobs listed for all of the local stations, like, you know, to be a regular reporter. So it's... the need is still there, and the need to do regular reporting, I think, is more than it's ever been. I mean, you know, you look at the banner, and then you look at what Fern Shen does with what's hers? Baltimore Beatdown. What's hers? No, not Baltimore Beatdown. She has a different one.
Fishbowl.
Fishbowl. I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, I mean, those types of things, as well as the Sun or the ghost thereof. I mean, it's all important. It's all important to get everything out there. You look at the guy who, you know, the Republican up in Long Island. I mean, that was just who fabricated most of his story.
Santos.
I mean, all that came from a tiny little publication that was Republican-leaning, you know? And they still said, this guy's got no clothes, and they ended up endorsing the Democrat. Those types of core value, small-time reporting that we kind of take for granted, we think everything's going to be somehow magically appear
right
on this box. Well, someone has to be out there and do that. There's always going to be a need for the physical, whether it's Nestor or Mike, to actually be out there to talk to the people to bring that stuff back. It's very analogous to the people who are just taking the feed out of the Ravens locker room. Well, at some certain point, there may not be anybody in front of them to ask those questions.
Oh, I wrote that at some point Harbaugh is going to come out, and it's going to be like opening the refrigerator at night, and the light's going to go on, and he's going to be talking to no one. It's going to be like Howard Beale, literally, right? Just shouting into the abyss after a game. But that that's the state of media at this point. You know what I mean?
The
people that want to cover it get mistreated, and the other people get held out. And then there's budgets where, I mean, Viviano didn't go 2 weeks ago to the game in Pittsburgh because WJZ didn't have the money to send him. It was the end of the year. So it's just, so there's one less reporter, one less set of eyes, one less set of questions, one.
Yeah. Well, I think it's sad. And I know it personally because, you know, journalism paid the bills for all those years. I mean, I'm a subscriber to the Banner. I pay into that. I pay into the New York Times. I pay into Washington Post. You know, I pay.
Banner's doing a nice job as a journalist, right?
Banner's doing a nice job. I mean, you know, I think they're still finding their way, but I think they deserve the support because they're looking at things from a different angle, and I think they're letting their people think. How about that? That's the most important thing. Because a lot of times, news tends to be a producer or an editor says, well, we think this is what's going on. And what I like about the Banner is they're letting their people in the field say, I
got a story.
I got a feel.
Let me go write this story.
Which makes for more original content. You know what I mean? It's truly original. It's something you wouldn't find because it came on the other end of a press release. And that's why I really respect what they're doing. I think they need to do more of it, but but the caveat is I did a job for them briefly. So, I mean, I have accepted their money.
Mike Shue is here. He is MS Storyworks, formerly at WJZ, only 27 years. I didn't realize you were there that long. Yeah. I would have given you 15.
Yeah, it was good. It's a great run. And I talked to Zerwick right after it happened. And I called him right away because I wanted to get my side of the story out because I knew that just the nature of how television is, not Jay-Z or CBS, it's just they never, if they let someone go, they never really say anything about it.
Right.
It's just, so I wanted to make sure my point got out. And the ground rules I had with him is I'm not going to say anything negative. I am not saying anything negative. You know, you can't have 27 years without something being negative, but I'm not going to say it because they put food on my table. They were good to me. I was good to them. We had a good relationship, and it was just business. And while it was a tough, you know, pill to swallow, but it was just business, and it didn't have anything to do with me personally. And I'm really happy about that. And the leadership I was able to bring to them, and you know, it's also all the stations except for Fox 45 are union stations. So it was very. What I really enjoyed also as part of my work, which no one ever saw in the field or on TV, was I was the shop steward for 20-some different on-air people. And it was always amazing to me to have to work the issues between the people who were on TV and the people who were employing us and to be able to sit in the corner office and say, look, here's how this is how we see this. This is how this works. Let's figure out a problem, or let's figure out a solution to this problem. And it was, I learned so much by being able to talk to different managers and some who were more receptive than others. And where I learned the most was the ones who were the least receptive. And because it forced me to up my game to figure out how do we both benefit from this without having to use threats or get angry or, you know, I always entered with a smile and left with a handshake because that was the most important thing to me was to preserve the relationship so we could actually talk about these issues. And it worked out well. And only rarely did I have to say, look, we can either figure this out
peacefully
here in this office between the two of us, or we can let our subordinates in New York, or not subordinates, we can let the people above us in New York do the work, and then we're both saddled with whatever decision they make. So I trust us to work it out rather than them to work it out. And you know, most of the time that got good results.
Well, it was a big company, and you know, I mean, and obviously wielded a lot of power, Jay-Z. So how can my audience help you? What is MS Storyworks
now, I've just done a couple of projects in Iceland for a startup and for an environmental and for an environmentalist. So I travel around. I've worked with a developer down in North Carolina who's locally based telling about their new project. So I do corporate video for large and small clients. I'm doing a job next week for Anderson Windows. It is the corporate office, but it's a small, almost news story about a veteran who gave a lot, and now she's getting free windows and doors from the company. So that's a corporate promotional spot for them that they call snackable content, which is just going to run internally. And then I'll also do these long, you know, 10 and 15 minute long sort of mini documentaries. And what your audience could do is...
I call that a podcast segment.
Oh, there you go. That, for me, that's long. No, because there's a lot more layers to it. But I mean, I do... If your business needs a video to promote yourself for the web or for whatever reason or for internally, I got that.
So I could come to you and say, it's my 25th anniversary this year. I need you to create a corporate video that's 4 minutes long for me telling my story.
Boom.
In some sort of way.
Yep. And then we figure out budget and stuff like that, because everything's, it's all time-based. You know, if you have a huge project, there's going to be more time all throughout the process. And if it's something short, you can get it done relatively easily. So that's primarily what I do. Lately, I've been doing some work. I just finished up on a PBS primetime show with the chef Patty Jinich, and she's running across the border in America and Mexico, and did 4-segment writing for that, which was amazing, with my friend Darren Durlach at Early Light Media, who's a former National Photographer of the Year and used to work at Fox 45. We met out in the street and did another project for him on a guy named Hockey that's running on Discovery Plus, and it was an hour-long show where they did the production and everything, but they handed it to me to write. And that was a monster, getting 300 gigs of media just dumped and say, okay, here's the outline. Go figure this out.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was broadening for me to see how that stuff works. And that just started to air about a week ago, and it's on Discovery Plus, and it's called Hi, My Name is Hockey. And it turned out really, really well. Partially because Early Light Media with Darren, they're an award-winning group of mostly former newsies, but they really, really have a fantastic editor on the back end, Jody Weldon, who, you know, my stuff was okay. All right, it was good. And he made it really good. And that was, it's great to see. I'm used to doing where I control everything.
Well, you're doing something completely different than you. I mean, you did the same thing for 27 years to some degree.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, yeah. I did
4, 5, 6, 11, by the, you know, 2 minutes ahead. You know,
variations.
You were down at
the
hospital, something happened, or down at the, you know, wherever.
So by doing these corporate videos or these communications, I had coffee with Jane Miller, was it yesterday or the day before? And I was talking like, you know what? I always thought it was a little bit different, but in a way, I'm still telling news stories, but I'm telling a story for that corporation's audience or that corporation's employees, or, you know, I mean, in a sense, I still feel like I'm doing news, but I'm doing news for those people. And it's fascinating. It's rewarding. I mean, to be out in the middle of a fjord in northern Iceland and be in control of the boat captain who owns this beautiful boat, one of the world's leading kelp scientists, the COO of the company that hired me, 2 divers and a drone operator, and I still have to do my photography work because I am a
videographer. Did you see the Northern Lights? That's the most important.
Yes, I did.
What?
Twice.
What?
Boom.
That's my bucket list.
Dude, they're
what?
About, they look, here, right up the camera, they look
green.
They're that color. Yeah, they're green. They are
green like a green pepper.
It's amazing. They're green like a green pepper. They really are. And
wait, well, you story tell. I'm going to have a G&A crab cake bite.
Yummy, yummy,
keep
yummy.
Going.
Well, we got lucky because
you got to be awake.
We got to be awake, and it is late. And I have contacts, and I left accidentally my little bucket. We had a group that got split up in a couple of groups, and the girls were off on a sheep farm. That's where they were sleeping. And almost as soon as they got out of our car and started driving away, I'm like, oh, I can't believe I don't have my things to take my contacts out. And they're a special kind, and they're the size of saucers, and you just can't go blink, blink. You got to use a little, like, you know, toilet plunger.
My wife has that.
Absolutely. So that plunger in Iceland was far away from me. So I had to call them, like, I'm sorry, you got to come back, otherwise I'll die, you know. And so they come back, and we kibitz a little bit, and, you know, it was late at night. You know, we had a cocktail, and then the girls go to leave. And
Mr. Yuck's out the window all of a sudden.
Yeah, all of a sudden, they come back like, get in the car, we got to go. Like what? Like, look, oh my goodness. Well, we're in a city, even though it's a tiny city of like 500, there was still light pollution. She goes, I know where to go. We went up into a little mountain pass. And it was
how long,
like,
did this go on?
How long did the Northern Lights go on? Oh,
hour?
Eventually you get bored. Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, no, no, no. I would never get bored.
How about this one? 17 degrees, and you maybe should have put on all your gear.
Right.
After about 40 minutes, you're just kind of like, I got to either get in the truck or we got to go. And then what happens is they come and go. It's not like it's a pre-programmed show. You
right.
have no
yeah,
idea what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you'd be like, okay, well, they look like they're fading out. And the last person in the car will go,
boom.
All right, no, they're not. Come back out. And then all of a sudden they start dancing again. And they're different. You can get.
My wife and I went to see Pearl Jam about 4 or 5 years ago, before the plague, 17, 18, so 18 probably. We went out to Montana to see Pearl Jam in Missoula, and the Perseid meteor shower was happening that week, and I knew about it, and we got up at 3 in the morning and drove 50 miles east of Great Falls.
No light pollution, nothing.
Just tried to get way out in the middle of nowhere, and we sat on the hood of the car. It was very Wayne and Garth.
Yeah.
And we're sitting on the hood of the car, and we looked up, and, you see one? You see one? You see one? And then all of a sudden, it's like, damn, it's cold out here. Let's... Let's go back to Grateful.
Yeah.
You know, so I understand what you're saying.
So the two nights, we saw two nights in a row. It was that, it was cold that drove us in, because it was so beautiful and so gorgeous and mind-altering that I loved it. But we had to go. Now, conversely, other friends of mine who've had jobs in Iceland, who've been back 6, 7, 8 times, have never seen them. Because, you know, like, it's a great place to see them, but it's an island in the middle of the Atlantic. And, you know, you get cloud cover a lot. I mean, you better like clouds if you go to Iceland. Which, by the way, thank you. The Iceland sky is like no other, because you are in the middle of the ocean. So there's a lot of clouds that come and go and this and that. And, oh, my stuff, the stuff I shot in Iceland looked gorgeous.
I've landed in Reykjavik a couple of times on the way to Europe. Yeah. I've never gotten out because it's expensive.
Yeah,
I'm always in a hurry to get to Europe. You know, it's just like, it's never felt like I'm going to stay in that Blue Lagoon thing. Looks a little cheese ball. For me, it just looks a little cheesy.
And the funny thing is there's there are probably 20 other of them around.
I mean, spas,
there are hundreds of little, what they call hot pots. I mean, they're the size
of
the
table.
Yeah, so most of them are free. Some of them, you know, are all spa-like. But the Blue Lagoon did a great job marketing that. And you know what it is? It's right next to
the
geothermal plant, and they needed a place for some of their extra thermal energy. And so literally that was sort of a co-branded thing to the geothermal plant that's right next door.
Well, you can't, if you're going to spend any time there, you're going to wind up there or in Reykjavik eating a $40 cheeseburger or something like that, right?
But if you ever go again, because Play and Air Iceland and some of the other ones have, you know, good things where you can stop and do around, you can easily do the southeast tour on the ring road. You can do 2 days and see a lot of stuff. Now, it's strictly sort of the tourist parade.
Right.
But boy, it's still a good looking tourist parade. I like the West Fjords, which is up on the other side. And
I did the fjords of southern New Zealand on the South Island, Manapouri and the bottom of the world.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Beautiful.
But how lucky are we to be able to travel? You know what I mean? Some people never get out of West Baltimore or East Baltimore, or they never get out of their state. You know, and yeah, I feel
it's
very
a beautiful
fortunate.
World.
It's a beautiful world. I feel that's one of the things that I loved about doing news, is because it was a hard, tough business, both personally, physically, you know, sometimes financially and mentally. But yet, if you have a positive attitude, man, you can see so much good in people when you're out there every day. Unexpected goodness, and that's why I was like, just said that thing about how lucky are we that we get to travel. Because we are fortunate, you know, to remember how fortunate we are. I think if you can do that and make a business of it, which I kind of feel like I'm doing with the MS Storyworks, I feel I'm super lucky when I finish a project. I'm like, that was cool. I met people. I
wouldn't have been
stuff.
Doing that if I stayed at if I was still doing the other thing, right?
No, and my friends who are still in the business, not just at 13, but otherwise, they you know, sometimes they don't want to take my calls because, like, okay, where have you gone cool now?
Nah.
You
know? So the Northern Lights.
Yeah, where have you gone cool now? And I'm like, it's not like that every day. But what I miss from what they get to do is they never know if they're going to show up any given day and fly on a C-130 or a Blackhawk or run around or meet unbelievable people. Like, we never would have met if I would have gone into corporate communications right from the jump.
Right.
Because we just, you know.
Different world.
Different world.
Yeah, different world.
And so I feel very, I liked doing what I did for Jay-Z, and I'm not glad I'm not there anymore. I'm glad I'm doing something different, because those are all good people there too. You know?
Mike Shue is here. He is MS Storyworks. So you remember him from WJZ for 27 years. We have crab cakes. We're at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog. We are in, I've been picking at mine here. We're in White Marsh, no longer in Highland Town. Come on out, have a crab cake, have a hot dog, visit the new place, wait in line if you have to on a Saturday or Sunday morning for some breakfast. Really good seeing you, man. Thanks for coming out. I have a Maryland crab cake tour scratch off from the Maryland Lottery. I'm going to give you a holiday cash drop because I think the snowman looks kind of cool on here, and the Raven season's almost over with. So big appreciation to all of our guests out here. Kent came out, Rod Shotgun as well. Andy from G&A, as well as my dear friend Nick Fisher from Wise Markets. He's at store 180 at Honey Go, right around the corner from here. I got to stop there and get a gallon of milk. That'd be a wise choice for me on the way home. And we just had a great day here. And I've been waiting to get out here for 9 months. He's been open since March. It's been packed out here. And I knew the crab cake was going to be delicious. Little saltine here and a delicious side salad to go with it. I'm getting ready for football.
Yes.
Pray for the Ravens. Okay. Pray for the offseason. Pray for Lamar. Let's all have a purple prayer right now. All right, I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, signing off from White Marsh at G&A. We are BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us.